Well, welcome back, everybody, or welcome to our Saturday morning show. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here to help you with your car problems, help you with your car issues, and talk to you about different things in our industry that will help you understand us and obviously help us understand you as well. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by one of my best shops in Phoenix, and that's available on my website, and that's Kurt's Auto Repair at I-17 and Bell. He's a good shop. He knows how to fix cars. He treats people well. He treats his staff well. And he has a master tech as his service writer and shop foreman kind of guy. That's Jeff. And then he has a master tech on the floor, Eric. And he has other technicians, but those two guys are very, very smart. And more than anything else, they know when to cut bait. So otherwise, this one's going to eat our lunch. So that's something that we see. Anyway, Kurt says, I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, been around a very long time. I think he's been around since 1987. He's a good guy. So if you live in that area, try him for an oil change and see how you like him.
Cut bait. I've never heard you say that before. You don't even like to fish.
Why are you asking me? That means bail out of the deal.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Just cut your bait off and move on.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I have this flyer in front of me from one of my favorite shops.
Okay.
This is a chain here in town.
Okay.
It's a chain that sells the most batteries in the whole city.
Okay.
And what happens is that people break down and they show up and they sell them a battery. All of us in the industry know full well that most of those cars are going to come back in to right. us. Now, the reason we know that is because when we open the hood, they have a brand new dot, 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 dot battery.
Okay.
And the alternator's bad, the belt's bad, the regulator's bad, there's a short or a draw, the cables are filthy dirty. But boy, do they sell the batteries. So my advice to you is when you call a road service, just have them take you to your shop. You're far better served that way. Now, what does happen is they take a battery out that's under warranty. So now the customer wants the warranty but doesn't have the battery.
Oh, okay.
And that creates a big problem. So we can't really warranty without testing it. And here's the most important aspect of all this. You have to charge a battery before you test it. Because if the battery is low on voltage, it's going to fail. So the procedure always has been put the battery on a battery charger for 30 minutes or an hour and check the battery then. That's the best way for you to be treated when it comes in. That's obviously something that can't be done when you're broken on the side of the road.
Right.
That's not going to happen. But I guess Mesa ended up getting this complete inspection for $99.99 flyer.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
It's just a flyer by this particular entity, and it gives you plus a free tire rotation, a $26 value.
Okay.
Includes scanning the vehicle for travel codes. Does that have anything to do with cutting bait? Is that fishing?
That's fishing, yeah.
Okay. Inspection of brakes, cooling system, suspension, and exhaust, and a battery test.
Yeah.
Those are all fishing.
Right.
Every single one of those is fishing. We're going to bring you in and tell you we're going to check all of this when it doesn't benefit you but 10% and it benefits us 90%.
Right.
Plus, this company deals with the older generation.
They're trying to make you feel better about if something could be wrong with your car or scaring you, probably.
Well, looking for codes is fishing. There's no question about that because if your check engine light's on, there's a code.
Exactly.
But if the check engine light's not on, there's no codes. Then you talk about the inspection of brakes and tire rotation. That's no big deal because you do both of those in one time.
Right.
You take the tires off to rotate them. You check the brakes. You put the tires back on. It's not two operations. It's one.
Right.
And so anyway, one of the shops sends me this flyer. And you know it just wads up my underwear for something fierce.
Of course.
But he says, I did the inspection. I did the tire rotation and checked the brakes and I did the battery test. And my normal price is $20. So he says, I saved the customer $80, and I did the same thing as.
Wow. But $20, what did he do?
He did an inspection.
Okay.
And a rotate, and the inspection included checking the battery.
Okay.
And obviously, because he did the rotate, he checked the brakes.
Okay.
So there was no check engine light. So he sent me the whole thing.
Okay.
And he didn't do this because the customer pulled this flyer out after he had already done it. So it was one of those situations he didn't know. Now, if they came in with a $99 flyer, there's some of us, so there's some of my friends, that would automatically go to $15 or $20 just to make them look bad.
Right.
But this is not the case. The customer came up with the flyer afterwards.
Afterwards. Okay.
So anyway, that's something to beware of. Mark's not had a good week.
No, you haven't. I know.
I haven't. And while you were gone gallivanting all morning long, the dog got sick in the radio studio, and that's the reason why there's carpet cleaner in the vacuum in this radio studio. I just want to let you know that.
Oh.
Okay. Just be aware of
like
that.
I've never dealt with that.
You didn't deal with it this morning. I can tell you that much right now.
Darn, I'm sorry I missed it.
Yeah, I bet you are. Okay, I've got some other things I want to talk about. You know that we had a crash at our shop. And, folks, I just aired the dirty laundry in front of you. We had a really bad situation happen at the shop, and we're going to accept responsibility for our half. A guy comes in, and he's got a noise, and he drops his car off. And you know what he does for a living?
Oh, of course. He's an engineer.
He's an engineer.
Yeah.
And he says he's got a noise. Now, we violated Mark's first rule, and that's we don't do noises without having the customer show us what noise to fix. Because it turns out this way all the time.
Right. There could be several noises, and we hear a different one than the customer hears.
Absolutely.
But he did explain it a little bit better. He said, at slow speeds on gravel. I don't know why he's driving his little Sienna and, you know.
Where are we going to find gravel?
Right. Well, I guess Ron did because he got it to duplicate.
Is this going to be a Perry Mason moment where you're sticking up for him and I'm going to?
No, I'm just painting the whole picture.
Fill it in. So he comes in. We don't take a test drive with him. You know that that's our job.
Right.
Okay, so then we bid him two front struts and two mounts. And he okays the bid. And then he comes in to pay for it. And he has his phone up and he has it to Rock Auto. And he thinks we replace the entire strut assembly. Now, the entire strut assembly is three components. The upper mount, the strut, and a spring. We did not replace the spring. And the reason we didn't replace the spring is the height of the car was fine.
Right.
So there was no reason to do the spring. So he's raising lots of hell in the lobby. He's raising lots of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And enough to where people are coming out of their offices. So we tell him, we know you're upset, and we're going to take ours off, and we're going to put those new ones on at no charge to you. So we're going to buy an assembly. That's the strut, the shock absorber, the spring, and the upper mount. And basically, we're going to do all the job all over again and not charge you a dime.
Extra. No.
That's right.
Yeah, no more.
Not,
okay.
Right. So we're going to do it. We're going to make you happy on our dime. So now we've taken the shocks and struts off twice. This will be the second time. And we've upgraded his shocks and struts, and we ate all of that.
Yes.
Okay, then what happens?
Well, I don't even think we had a chance to ask him if that would make him happy. He just said, make it right, and then walked out the door.
Right.
And then we called him and said, would that make you happy? And why don't you come and take a test drive now so that we can see if the noise is gone, first of all.
Yeah.
And he refused that.
Okay, so the first time we should have asked him for a test drive, and we didn't.
Right.
Then the second time we asked him, well, you need to come and take a test drive with us, and he said no.
He said no.
And he walks out. That one time he walks out the door and he says, make it right.
Right.
Okay. So we don't know what to do, but they offered him a good deal.
Right. So we called him back and said, do you want us to replace the whole strut assembly? Which he did call back and say, yeah, do that. So we did that.
Okay.
And then he comes 3 or 4 days later to pick it up.
Okay.
And we say, let's go for a test drive. And he says, no, I don't need a test drive. Gets in the car, comes back about 5 minutes later, said, I need to take a test drive. I got a noise.
Okay.
But it wasn't the same symptoms that he had said originally.
All right, but let me play Perry Mason on this. We don't know the A noise was the first noise.
Exactly.
And we now have a B noise. We don't know if it's two A noises. We don't know if it's an A and a C noise that we created when we did all this work.
Right.
We don't know what A, we know what A was, but we don't know what B was.
Right.
So we take a test drive with him.
Yeah, and I think the other mistake we made was the tech that fixed
Larry
the
car. Larry is your next caller. Larry
didn't actually take the test drive with the customer. The general manager did.
That's right.
So, you know.
And that was a disconnect because the one that's going to fix the car or the general manager, he takes a ride with the car and verifies then he works with the technician to diagnose the noise.
Right.
That
but
didn't
he didn't
happen.
Hear the first noise, so he doesn't really know if it's the same noise. It should have been the same tech.
Okay, should have been the same tech. So we've made two mistakes.
Right.
We didn't do a test drive at the front side, and there was a disconnect between who drove it and who fixed it the second time.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back.
Yeah. Well, he was going to leave the car for us to find the second noise. I guess he got a ride, went home, figured he couldn't get in his house, so he needed to come back
get
and
his
get
house
his keys.
Yeah.
And all this time he had two little girls with him. So then
let me finish the story.
Okay.
Because you're going to be too nice.
Okay.
He's got these two little girls that are about 6 years old and less.
Right.
And the reason why we know six is because our granddaughter's six.
Right.
And he is using language that would make a sailor blush. And it starts with M and F. He is in the lobby and he's completely out of control. And this is what he says. He works for a major electronic firm. He's worked 50 hours last week, 50 hours on this piece of equipment. He's been looking at wiring diagrams for 50 hours. And he's just beside himself, and he can't control himself. And do you know what a bad week I've had, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess. I wasn't there.
And
but
so,
that's
but
what
he
heard.
He is MFing everybody.
Right.
So Alan, our son, goes out and says, please calm down.
Yeah.
And so the guy threatens him. That was a stupid idea because Alan's looking down. Alan's like 8 inches taller than he is, and Alan outweighs him by 100 pounds. So he looks up at Alan, and he says, there's going to be ramifications. And he goes outside, and he gets in his car. But he leaves his young daughter in the public bathroom in the lobby.
He takes one, but he forgets the other.
He doesn't take the other. So Alan knows that she's in there. So Alan has a daughter her age. So Alan waits outside the door.
Yeah.
And when she comes out, he says, come on, honey. And he grabs her hand and he takes her out front.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the guy's coming back in because now he realizes he doesn't have a daughter. So that was a blow up. We did our fair shares of mistakes.
1 minute.
Here's the third mistake we didn't do.
Yeah.
Number one, when he was holding up his phone, he was yelling at us and complaining that we had not replaced the entire assembly. We should have just known right there that this fire was out of control.
Right.
We should have pulled the car back in. We should have put his old parts back on it. We should have just bid him goodbye, closed his file, said, go on, go find another shop, and we would have eaten only one labor.
Right.
But instead, we have two labors, and we have two sets of shock absorbers that we now own.
Mm-hmm.
So we should have done a better job, and we should have recognized. But our kids were trying to make him happy. But the learn here is you're not going to make everybody happy.
That's right. You can't sometimes.
Yeah.
And 50 hours, our people work 55 every week, so I don't know what he was complaining about.
Well, Andy,
about,
our daughter, did say that. She says, you know, I wanted to say something like, well, all of us work 55 hours a week, but she didn't, and that's good.
Right.
It would have been different if I was there.
Oh,
it would have been
glad
different.
You weren't.
It would have been a rodeo, and it would have been ugly, and it would have been different. And we would have changed those parts off in a heartbeat. I'd assign the whole shop to that car. I want those shock absorbers off. I want his new ones back on, and I want it done in 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have looked like a pit crew from NASCAR.
That's right.
And then I would have taken him out to the sidewalk, and I would have said to him, don't darken our doorway ever again.
Right.
And then I would have pulled my phone out, taken a picture of him. That would have really made him mad, and I would have posted that picture all over the lobby. So I don't get mad very often, but I don't understand.
You don't?
I don't understand why he went from 0 to 100 because he had to work a 50-hour week.
Well, and some people just think that's the only way they're going to get something is to yell and scream. So.
Yeah, well, he ain't never coming back, and I hope and pray he needs a warranty on those shocks.
Yeah.
Because he's going to have to deal with me, and it ain't going to be pretty.
Okay.
All righty. It's 8:17. Larry's on the phone. When we get back, we're going to take Larry. Is that okay?
Yeah, 10:17, but...
Oh, it's 10:17. What did I say?
8:17.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's 10:17. Now it's 10:18.
And you're a minute late, so let's go.
Okay. And I'm a minute late, and we'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. And we're here at your service. Larry, I'm going to be with you in about 15 seconds. S&S Tire is in the west side. They serve Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. And I've been saying all along that they have so many different brands of tires, and then they have so many different sizes of tires that you can go in there, and you can ask them for a good, better, best kind of price, and they'll give it to you. But I also want to tell you that they have all kinds of tires for your personal vehicle, but anything from, you know, big tires, little tires, construction tires, trailer tires, mudder tires, highway tires, everything imaginable. And I say, and they probably have wheelbarrow tires. And the other day someone sent me an email and said, I purposely stopped by S&S to see if they had wheelbarrow tires, and they do.
Good.
So he says, you don't have to say that they may have them because they really do have wheelbarrow tires.
Mm-hmm.
And so S&S has lots and lots of tires. They really know their business. They've been around a very long time, since 1976. They're the second generation. So the father has passed and the boys take over, and they're really good guys. There has been times that they've raised their hands and done things that even I and others thought they shouldn't have or couldn't have or weren't required to, and they still did it. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty proud of the guys at S&S Tire. Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Good morning, Larry. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2000 Pathfinder Nissan, and I have a problem. The check engine light won't go on, and I can't pass emissions. And I've done it. I've checked all the connections. I've done everything I possibly can, and I'm just wondering if there's something dumb, stupid I could possibly do. If there's a, if maybe it's electrical, or you have the knowledge about something like that. Can you help me?
Well, what part of town are you in?
I'm in the Peoria, Sun City area, west of the 101 freeway on Olive.
Okay, I can't help you because that's a once a year repair, and I can tell you this. That there is a troubleshooting chart that you would go into, and it'll tell you. For instance, the plug down on the left side is called the data link connector, and that's the one they plug into at emissions. The very first thing you have to do is you have to verify that every single pin in that plug is working and giving you the data it should. One should be power, one should be ground. Then all the rest of them have different jobs, and a lot of times the problem is there. But sometimes you're missing the ground or you're missing the power, and the power is on leg 7, and leg 7 is on fuse 21. And so there's a trouble chart that you have to go through. The first thing you want to do, you have to go through the trouble chart first, because you don't want to have to take the dash apart to look at the bulb. And and if you wanted to do something yourself, then you need to find a bulb that works, take the dash out, And swap the bulbs.
I have the cluster out.
Okay, then swap the bulbs.
Check the bulbs.
Okay, checking them's not good enough. You have to take one like it and put it in the check engine hole, and then take the check engine hole and put it in the other one. Checking them is not good enough.
Yeah, I did that with the alternator light. Okay.
Okay, so now you're going to have to
interchange the bulbs, you mean?
I want you to take the bulb and the socket out of the back of the printed circuit board and switch two of them.
Okay.
And the other one still works, and the check engine light doesn't work. Okay, well, you've done that.
Doesn't work.
You've saved yourself some money there. But I can't fix your problem. I haven't looked at that chart in 100 years. I know there's a chart. I know we fix those problems, but I know everybody else fixes those problems too. But as far as telling you how to do it, you know, you can do like everybody else.
Can you suggest a shop that is good at that? Anywhere in town can have a car towed, because I can't get it registered. I can't get insured. I can't get registered.
Well, there's two guys. There's Thunderbird Auto up there in the Northwest, and I know Tom's a pretty doggone good technician. But there's another guy at 38th Avenue and Indian School at Harker's Auto, and this is right up his alley because he's like one of the best diagnosticians I know. So his name is Bob at Larry Harker's Auto, and I know he's going to be able to find that. It's going to depend, too, on the cost. And this is going to be one of those deals where it costs $112 to find it and 6 cents to fix it.
I know. I think it's just a short or a ground or something, and I can't find it. You know.
Well,
and also would the alternator have anything to do with it? Now, when I start the car at night and the lights dim, and then they brighten when I increase the idle speed.
Well,
would that have anything to do with it?
That's chasing your tail. Now you're welcome to go run that down. The problem is I wouldn't run it down until I fix the check engine light. Or you refocus. I don't want you to have those two eggs in the same basket. Okay, everybody can answer your question about is the alternator glow that related to the check engine light. We can answer that question after we fix one or the other. But for you to try to put them together, that's a bad deal. I don't let my techs do that either. Fix one, find one, and fix one. You're probably easier to do the alternator because that's a bad diode. It has three in the diodes and it's feeding back through. So somebody with the proper equipment can look at your alternator pattern, and what we want is a bunch of M's. And we don't want spikes like a heartbeat, beat, beat, beat. We want just a bunch of da-da-da-da-da-da-da, just little M's. And that tells us the diode's pattern's good. So if you can find somebody to do that, and they say the diode pattern's bad, then at that particular point you could put an alternator on it if that's what you wanted, and that's what they said their diagnosis had done, and the diagnosis on that alternator is probably going to be $25 to $50. You can put it on yourself.
Yeah.
So if you want to fix that first and see it, but I don't know. And I don't imagine, I've been wrong before, I can't imagine that there's a tie between your check engine light, your DLC being dead, and the alternator glowing at night. I may be wrong, but I don't think so. All right, good luck to you, Larry. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. I want to do some more rants. And by the way, folks, this is like a psychiatric treatment for me. So send me your name, address, and your zip code to my email address. It's easy. It's mark@marksalem.com. And I'm going to send $5 to you for listening to me. Okay?
$5 to each person?
Yes.
Or
yes.
$1. I thought you said $1.
I changed it.
You might have thousands of people calling.
I doubt it. No, most of them are laughing because Mark's ranting.
Oh, my God.
All right. I want to tell you something else. I had another engineer.
No.
I've been telling people.
Not in the same week?
In the same week. I've been telling people a lot of times, you can't go wreck your car and then push it home and call your insurance company and tell them that somebody hit you. You can't do that. And that's still valid. It's still valid no matter what anybody says.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is that your debris field, you know what the debris field
is?
1 minute. If your car's in front of your house and somebody hits it, there's all kinds of glass and paint and mud on the ground.
Yes.
You can't duplicate that.
No.
Okay. So the debris field plus the black box is going to snitch you off. And if you're lucky, your insurance company won't file criminal fraud charges against you. So I had another engineer take issue with that.
I don't think 30 seconds is enough.
This is called a tease, okay?
It's enough time
all right, that's
to do
fine.
It.
No, you're right. You're right. So this engineer writes me, and he says this. I have a 94 Taurus, and you're wrong. And he sends me one picture out of his owner's manual. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I care about his 94 Taurus about as much as I care about, you know, some guy in Arkansas right now. I just don't care. But I made a big mistake.
Okay. Well,
I tried to talk to him. I tried to talk to him, and we've had dialogue, and it's getting ugly. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Renee. I'm not quite sure what her last name is going to be at the end of this show, but right now it's Salem.
Funny.
This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom owns Action Auto. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. Family-owned, full-service auto repair shop. He serves Deer Valley, North Phoenix since 1983. I've known him since the late 70s and early 80s. He's a really nice guy. He's honest and he's dependable, and he has ASE Master Certified Technicians, which is a step above somebody who has no certifications. So, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. If you're looking for a good shop, then try them out. Okay, real quick before we go to Don, I want to finish my story.
Okay.
So, he said, so we have this discussion. I look at the wiring diagram and I say to him, there's three portions of the electrical system of a car. There is key in your pocket and then start and run.
Okay.
Got it?
Got
three.
It.
So, he says that the key in your pocket, his Taurus will pop the bags. Okay?
Okay.
And I look at the diagram, and I'm looking, and I only see two feeds to the module, start and run. But I admit, I missed another leg.
Okay.
And so there is a power all the time, key in your pocket, power all the time. So I made a mistake there. So he sends me a wiring diagram, and sure enough, it is. So at this particular point, we're having this dialogue, and again, I'm really not caring about his 23-year-old car. I'm just not caring about that. But there's still this conversation going on, and I remember writing him, I said, if there's going to be a continuation of a conversation, then you're going to be the only one in it. I find out later that this guy's been playing with my head for 2 years.
Really?
I look at him and I look for his email, and he's been ragging on me for 2 years.
About this airbag issue?
No, other things. Just picks apart things I say.
Oh, okay.
He's an engineer, I told you.
Oh, yeah.
So I call a couple of experts here in town, and you're not going to believe the end of the story. I find the guy that worked for Ford that designed this system.
Wow.
So I got a hold of him. He lives in Atlanta.
Okay.
So the guys here go, you might want to talk to Rick. And I think he was with Ford. And so I called Rick and I said, I want to know what a safing switch is. S-A-F-I-N-G. And he goes, I helped design that. He says, you're talking about somebody with a thermal fuse that's blown inside and they have to buy the whole thing? And I said, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I said, here's the situation. He goes, you're more right than you're wrong, and he's more wrong than you're right. But here's why. So I talked to him, and I talked to two other engineers here in town. And I take all that, and I put it in a story, and I give it back to this engineer. You know what he says?
What?
Oh, and I send the website. I send a website to him that describes the safing switch, and everyone has blessed the description of the safing switch.
Okay.
So he writes me back, and he says this. I can't imagine that you think, in so many words he says this, I can't imagine that you think that sending me to some website that doesn't have a Ford logo or isn't Ford is going to, you know, instill confidence in your ability. Otherwise, he wants the Ford stamp on everything.
Right.
And he says, but I agree that the conversation should be over. And then he does a P.S. And he says something about, all my information is coming from Ford books and none of yours is coming from Ford books. And the P.S. is kind of a dig. So I've written him a nasty gram that I've been sitting on for 10 days. And I'm going to send it to him to get off my back about his 23-year-old Ford Taurus. I don't care about that. And here's the worst part. The worst part is that car's probably worth $1,000. And I have spent 10 or 15 hours talking to this guy about his stupid airbag system. I'm learning.
That's your
fault. I'm just learning. Don, good morning to you. How the heck are you? What can I do for you?
Doing fine, sir. Thank you very much. I have a question for you concerning a trip I made last weekend. I drove up to Las Vegas, and on the way, I usually just set my car up. By the way, I have a 2013 Lexus ES350 with about 42,000 miles on it. And I set the thing up at about 2,000 RPM, which gives me about 72 miles an hour, and I just cruise along. Everything's nice, and everything just copacetic. When I go up a slight hill, get a little bit of RPM change, maybe up to 2,400 RPM, something like that. Everything's good. However, when I'm going downhill, something really strange happened. And especially when I got onto a grade, I'm going to take a guess, at around 5 or 6% grade. And all of a sudden, the RPM goes from 2,000, it'll drop down to about maybe 1,300 or 1,400 for a couple of seconds. And it'll wind up to about 3,400 RPM, and it'll sit up there for a little while, and then it'll kind of settle back down, and it did that a number of times.
Okay, I have some questions for you. No.
Yes, sir.
Is the car, what's the speed when you're setting it at 70 miles an hour? What's the speed doing during this whole scenario?
Everything's steady.
Okay, 70 miles an hour.
Everything is smooth, and I don't feel any shift.
Okay.
I don't hear any RPM change.
Please, let me ask you questions. When you're on was this 5% grade uphill or downhill?
Downhill.
Okay. And it stayed 70 miles an hour on the downhill side?
Yes.
Okay. Then you need to look at your owner's manual, because I'm quite sure that your computer on your car is not going to let the mile per hour run away with you. I don't know what the limit is, but I can tell you the lady sitting next to me, her Ford, the limit's 4 miles an hour. So if she sets it at 70 and she's going down a steep 5%, 6%, 7% grade, and as soon as it gets over 74 miles an hour, the engine will either downshift her to slow her down, or it'll start applying the brakes, or it will do something to slow you down. So on a downhill grade, if your tachometer's waving all over the place, I want you to pay attention to the speed. And I want you to pay attention to what happens when it gets past your set on your cruise control. Because I'm quite sure the answer is, number one, there's nothing wrong with your car. I'm quite sure, too, that you're going to be able to quickly figure out that maybe you have 2 miles an hour over 70, and when it goes to 73, the car wants to slow you down. And in reality, I think physics will, you'll agree with me on this, physics says this. When you come down a hill at 5% in that kind of a car that's very smooth and has, you know, probably a 5 or 6 speed transmission and probably has some kind of a sport suspension to it, when you're coming down a hill at 70 miles an hour, there's no question you should gain speed. My 1-ton truck gains speed. I mean, sometimes 10 miles an hour on a 5% grade. So I think when you do the grade, if you do it again, I think you'll find that the car is holding you back to 70 or 72 miles an hour. And that's what the all that fluctuation is going on, is the car is programmed to do different things to bring your speed under control. If you have any other comments, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll be back with you right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. I probably should give the phone number if you have a car. A call, 602-508-0960, if you have a call or a criticism. I'm not necessarily in the mood for a criticism, but
You've been a little cranky again this morning.
I'm sorry. 602-508-0960. I can take criticism. I just can't take it 10 times in a row. Okay? That's the problem.
Who is criticizing you?
The engineers.
Oh, that was all last week.
Yeah,
I
that was
you
all.
Meant
no,
this
no,
morning.
No, 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 not today. Okay. All right, Don, I know you had a follow up question, and I'm all ears.
Yes. The other thing I was telling you about was I tried this setup several times, about seven or eight times on my way up and on my way back. And on my way back, I tried something a little bit different. I set myself up, just as I said before, straight and level, set 2,000 RPM, about 72 miles an hour, and then I go into a grade, and the needle started swinging up and down and up and down, and I just I punched off the cruise control, and it settled down. At least it went down to about 2,000, and sometimes it would dip down to about 1,400, but it would not go back up to the 3,400 range. Does that make any difference?
Yeah, kind of. So what I hear you saying is you're going up a hill this time.
I'm going downhill. Downhill's the only problem I have is going downhill.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you're fixated on the tack, and I don't know why that is, but don't you have a overdrive button on the shift handle of your car?
Yeah, I just turn it off. My autopilot or cruise control.
No.
No,
I said overdrive button. It's on my end. Don, there's a difference between the overdrive button on the shifter or on the dash and the cruise control. So I'm asking you, when your needle starts waving, have you ever pushed the overdrive button to eliminate the overdrive?
As far as I know, I don't have an overdrive button on my car. I've never found one.
All right. Is the shifter on the console or is it up on the column?
It's on a stick. No, it's on the console.
Okay. Well, then there's an OD there, and you can pull it out of OD down one gear, and it'll probably go OD to D. And that's overdrive on your shifter. I think what's going on here is you're describing something that I expect. No matter whether you're going uphill or downhill, the transmission's going to hunt. And when the transmission's hunt, it goes because the throttle goes deep and boom, it downshifts. And then it gains speed back up to 70, and then all of a sudden it upshifts. And then all of a sudden it'll see 69, so it downshifts. And that's called transmission hunting. So the way to determine whether that's going on is to take it out of overdrive, forget the tachometer, and just drive your car in cruise control with no overdrive, especially when you're going up and down hills. And if the problem goes away, then what you have is completely normal. But I would suggest that you not let it hunt. Don't let it hunt.
Okay.
Just pull it out of overdrive into drive and continue on. All righty.
Okay, I've made this trip several times, and this is the first time that's ever happened. So I thought there might be something new happening.
Well, that's the question you had.
Yeah,
is how many times has this happened? The problem is we need. I'm trying to help you diagnose it. If you go to your shop and you say, "This is what happens when I don't, and this is what happens when I do," then you're going to be a step or two ahead of everybody else who throws the keys at us and says, "I got a problem." I'm just trying to help you. I don't have a clue as to whether this is normal or not, but the description that you're giving me of the waving tack needle and cruise control and up or down hills, I'm familiar with that concern. And when I get to drive it and I look at it, I say to those people, there's no concern. And they may say to me, I've never seen it before. And my response is still there's no concern. My truck does it. Her car does it. We have a variety of rental cars that do that. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know the answer, but I'm trying to help you narrow it down. So try it my way. It's not going to hurt it. And then see if that changes it any. And then whoever your shop is get them involved. That's what I would do. Anyway, thanks very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
Shay is your next caller. Shay.
Shay, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, I have a Chrysler Jeep, 2014. It's a Patriot. And, yesterday when I was driving, I parked the car, went in to pick up a pizza, and then when I went out and put the key in ignition, it acted like it wouldn't start up. It was like it's kind of like there's a power, like a lack of power. And then the malfunction indicator light came on. And then I turned the key back off, and then I started again. And then I finally, after the third time, I was able to get it to start again. And then I drove it home and then just turned it off, and I haven't touched it since. Is that the owner's manual indicates that it has something to do with maybe a possible catalytic converter issue? Or
no, no, no. I need you to clarify something, and this is a constant problem with the communication between customers and shops. Is this a no crank, or is this a crank and no catch, or a crank and no start? Which one is it?
Crank and no start.
Okay. All right. See, that makes all the difference in the world. That makes all the difference in the world. So what I hear you say is you put your key in, then went rah, 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 and nothing happened. You turn the key off and you hit it again, rah, 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 and nothing happened. How many miles are on this Jeep?
It's 43,000.
Okay. And then you did it a third time, and when you did it a third time, the Jeep seemed to start, and it drove you home with no problem.
Right.
Okay. When you cycled the key three times, this is what happened. This is what I'm guessing what happened. And it's going to continue to happen, but I'm going to tell you how to fix it. I'm going to tell you how to go around and diagnose it yourself. When you parked the car, for whatever reason, the fuel system lost its pressure. Maybe an injector stuck open and drained the pressure in your fuel system. Maybe the check valve in the gas tank didn't close. Maybe the fuel pressure regulator developed a leak. I don't know, but it seems like you lost fuel pressure, and that's why you had to crank it three times. Now, here's what's going on. When you first time you crank it, the computer turns on the electric fuel pump for about 3 to 5 seconds. But if it doesn't see the RPM go from 150 to 600, then it shuts the fuel pump off. Because we say to the computer says, hey, I gave you fuel, and the motor didn't start, so I'm going to shut the pump off after 3 to 5 seconds. Now, you hit it again. Shay hits the key again. Then it happens again. So the computer runs the fuel pump for 3 to 5 seconds, but still, it's got to purge all the air out of the system, and it's got to repressurize the system up to 40 pounds. The first time it only got to 10 pounds. The second time it got to 25 pounds. The third time, boom, we hit 40 pounds. The car fires up. Now, every time this happens, when you crank it and it doesn't start, here's what you're going to do. You're going to turn the key to the on position, but you're not going to the crank, and you're going to count to five. Then you turn it off, and you turn the key back on and count to five. And then if you turn it off and hit the key to start it, it's going to start. So now we know what we got to do to get it to run, because we got to prime the fuel pump, and we're going to do that with key on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, key off. Now notice I didn't say crank there. The key is just on. So we do that again. On, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then we turn it off, and then we hit crank, boom, it starts right up. Now, when you walk into your garage and you tell them that's what you do to try to start your car, they're going to know exactly what to do, and you just saved yourself $100 worth of diagnostic time. So you have you've answered the questions. Now, here's what we're going to do. Each time you try to start it, you're going to stick the key in the ignition, and you're going to go, rah, 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 rah. And if it doesn't start as quickly as it normally does, then we're going to go to Mark Salem's plan. So the second time, key on, count to five. Third time, key on, count to five. Fourth time, hit it. If it fires up, look up at the Mark Salem gods. I didn't mean that.
Yeah,
look
I was
up,
say, whoa.
Look up at the gods. Look up at the gods and say thank you. Now, that any good shop once you tell them that, is going to know exactly what to do. Now, they may pull your spark plugs out of your Patriots and find one of them black. That means the injector's leaking. They may pull the vacuum line off of the fuel pressure regulator, put a vacuum pump on it, and find out it's bad. Or they may ask you, would you please fill the truck up and tell us whether or not the problem exists, and then let it get down to an eighth of a tank, and then tell us if the problem exists. They're checking the fuel tank and the fuel pressure or the backflow valve at the fuel tank. So you're still going to be involved in this repair, but if you do it right, it'll save you a lot of money on the diagnostic time. So hopefully that helped you, Shay. Good luck to you. And
thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, sir. You're welcome. 56 minutes after the hour. I've still got a few minutes.
Yeah, we want to talk about
Thompson's. Thompson's in Mesa. There's only one shop in Mesa that has my stamp of approval, and that's Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair. It's on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. I've said this 100 times. All you have to do is meet Brian or Thelma, and you will know why they're on my list. They are the kindest, gentlest. They're good business people. Brian's a good technician. And Brian's the kind of guy that knows when somebody's standing in front of him and BSing him. And most of the time, it might be a technician. But Brian's smarter than that. So he's not going to hire or keep technicians that try to BS him and explain something that he knows is different. So if you live in Mesa, the only shop that I believe in Mesa, the only shop that's passed the muster. Did you get that one?
Yeah.
Pass the muster. Did you like that? I didn't say mustard. The only shop in Mesa that's passed all the requirements impose on our best shops is Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street just east of Stapley. 602-508-0960. Gil's kind of lonesome, but you're welcome to call us. 602-508-0960. And when we come back, I want to tell you about my new transmission shop plan. You know, I've been having trouble finding good transmission shops. Quality went out of business. Mm-hmm. I had to fire one transmission shop.
Right.
And then one of them went out of business and one of them changed ownership. So I had to rearrange. There's two guys in this town and I know both of them. I'd shake their hands and I'd recognize them in a heartbeat. As a matter of fact, Alger worked for us in 1979.
Right.
There's two guys and this is how God's blessed me. One of them is at Deer Valley and I-17 and the other is in Tempe.
That's good.
So I'm going to, and they both do wholesale. That's bad. Mm-hmm. They both do fleet work and they do wholesale work. So I have worked out with them where I can refer people to them.
Okay.
Because they are the best I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I use them in the wholesale arena. And I gave Alger a truck and I had an email on the truck and the guy goes, he fixed it. It's the most amazing thing in the world. He fixed it. And the bill was $230 and nobody in town could figure this out. Then we talk about Lorenzo over in Tempe, and Lorenzo's Mercedes certified. You don't get that by knowing the right person. Right. You get that because you're smart. I just sent him a car the other day. The guy comes out of there. He's underneath his estimate. He rebuilds the transmission for $2,200. He puts a shift kit in it. Now the tires will bark, and that's all the guy talks about is the tires bark between first and second gear. He's so happy. I think he wants to just kiss me. We'll be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem or a comment or if you want to argue, I'm done arguing, but I'll still argue with you. 602-508-0960. What are you laughing at?
You're done arguing? I doubt it.
602-508-0960. I've had a tough week.
Oh.
602-508-0960. This portion of Unhood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service. They're in Tempe in the northeast corner. David and his crew have been around since 1972. They work on domestic and import cars, so no matter what you have in your garage, they work on it. But here's the best part. If you have a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or Alfa Romeo, they work on those, and they are absolutely the best when it comes to Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. So if you've got one of those four cars in your garage and a Toyota, Ford, a Honda, a Chrysler, they can do all your cars. Where guys like me and many of the rest of us, we just don't want to deal with Volvo, Saabs, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. It's hard to find parts for them. It takes a special know-how of those cars. And it's kind of like you got a doctor that works on all boys or all girls, And then you got the veterinarian that has to work on every animal. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. When you talk about Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo, you're talking about kind of a brain surgeon. He only works on brains, and he only works on boys. Well, that's the brain surgeon. It's not like a veterinarian, like I'm a veterinarian because I work on all kinds of cars except those. Is that? Do you understand that analogy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Alice, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning, Alice?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2015 Genesis. Recently, the check engine light came on. So I called the dealership, brought it into the dealership. They put it on their machine, and they said it needed a new TPS sensor. So they didn't have it. They would order the part. We went in the next day. They put the part on. They said it wouldn't calibrate. So they called Hyundai to see what was the problem. Hyundai said that you have to take the flywheel off, replace the flywheel.
Okay.
Is this something that I never heard of that?
Okay. All right. All right. And tell me the sensor again. Was it TPS, Tom, Paul, Sam?
Yes. Throttle position.
Sensor.
T is in Tom, T is in Peter, S is in Sam.
And they have to take the whole flywheel off.
That's what they said Hyundai told them to do.
Okay. I'm as stunned as you are. Let me explain. The throttle position sensor is up near the throttle cable, and it monitors the butterfly that opens and closes that make you go faster and slower. So the TPS, the throttle position sensor, reports to the computer what the heck's going on with your foot. So basically your foot is making the TPS talk. Now, there is a crankshaft sensor that may be at the flywheel, and we're going to use that to tell the computer where number one cylinder is. It has to know when to start talking. So let's say you have a four-cylinder, and let's say that the cylinders are numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if the flywheel just spins, the computer doesn't know which one 1 is. So they make a notch for 1, and then they have different notches for 2, 3, and 4. So every time the motor's spinning, the computer knows where number one is at. And when it sees number one, it knows what to do. So I'm as confused as you are, because I don't know why the flywheel has to come off. And I can tell you this much. I've never in my life had to deal with a flywheel for a throttle position sensor. But I will tell you this. The possibility exists that it never needed a TPS at the beginning. The possibility exists that the problem is at the flywheel, and perhaps they honestly misdiagnosed it, and perhaps they've asked for what we call technical help, and they've said, no, you've misdiagnosed it, but you have to replace this sensor, or you have to replace this gear, or you have to replace something that necessitates pulling the flywheel off. You don't really have any choice, but I'm going to give you the best advice I can, Alice. You look at your service writer, and you say to them, don't you spend a dime of my money until you tell me. That's number one. And number two, how confident are you that this is going to fix the problem? I need some kind of assurance. And I need you to fix the problem and not, I don't want to guess, because if we're going to guess four times, you're paying for all four guesses. So
well,
I just
under warranty, so
I understand.
I don't have to pay it.
I understand.
But I'm going to ask him that.
Yeah, you just tell him I'm not spending a dime, and it would be appropriate for you to ask kindly for a rental car. It would be appropriate for you to say, "I wasn't."
They already offered that.
Okay, then you take that, and I think that they've done. I think that they've responded appropriately, and here's the answer to your question. After this is all done and over with, you insist that you get the appropriate paper to show what they did, what part they did, and what labor they did. At the end of the day, that will explain everything that happened on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The paperwork on Friday will explain what happened on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And the paper will answer all your questions. And if you want, you can fax it to my office, and you and I will sit down and talk about it. But I would give them the first opportunity. I would give them the first opportunity to explain to you. Okay?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Pleasure,
Alice.
Pleasure listening to you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Do you know what
Donald is next?
Who? Donald?
Donald.
Donald, yes. Good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. Love the show. And I'm going to do a shout-out real quick to Larry Harkers and Kurt. I love them people over there.
Well, thank
you.
Thank
I got a 2000. All right, got a 2004 Chevy Astro 4.6 two-wheel drive, and I got my problem that I'm working on is a jittery oil pressure gauge. I'm just doing some groundwork trying to figure out how to proceed with it, and so I called around. It could be, you know, a sending unit, could be actual pump itself, I guess. But when I called for prices, they mentioned the oil pump, and they said there's a standard oil pump and a high pressure, and I did not understand why there would be a high-pressure oil pump. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah. If you and I owned an auto parts store and we had a regular oil pump and we had a high-pressure oil pump, every hairy-chested young man that came in that was working on his is that a 4.6 or 4.3?
You're correct, 4.3.
Okay. Everybody that's working on their hot rod V6 4.3, I need a few, or water, or I need an oil pump. And you say, oh, would you like the standard oil pump or would you like the high performance, high pressure one? Oh, give me that high performance, high pressure. That's the answer to your question.
Okay,
I would not do that. But before we do all this work, I want you to replace the oil pressure switch. Okay?
Okay.
Just replace the oil, because I'm telling you right now, 90% of the time when we have an erratic oil pressure problem, it's not. It's the messenger that's lying, and the oil pressure switch talks to your dash. So you go down and tell them, I want you to put in my hand an oil pressure switch for my 04 Astro van with a 4.3 liter, and then it's going to be near the oil filter. They always are. Or it could be back at the could be at the back of the intake. You're going to have to take the doghouse off. And as a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure yours is at the back of the intake. Once you get one in your hand, you'll know what it looks like. You take the wire off, make sure the car's not running. You unscrew the old one, you screw the new one in, you put the wire back on it, and 80% of the time, your call is fixed. Now, if I'm right, next time the plate passes you, you make an extra couple of bucks.
Wait a minute. First you said 80, first you said 90, now you said 80. So which is it?
You know what? I'm looking at my paper right here, and I'm looking at the clock, and I'm doing a lot of things other than keeping track. I'm gonna stick with 80.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with
80. So you're not as sure as you were.
Oh, I'm going to say, you know what? This might be your last show.
That's what you said last week.
Anyway, Donald, let me know how that turns out, okay?
I will do. Thanks much.
All righty. Do you know what that can is on the radio studio desk?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's my leg shaving stuff.
You know why it's there right now?
No, I don't. What is, why?
Listen, I need all the ladies out there and all the men, especially the men.
Okay.
To write this down. Skin to munt.
Okay.
So it's like intimate with skin in front of it.
Okay.
You don't know this, but a month ago I ran out of shaving cream. And I don't shave my legs or any other part of my body except my face.
Okay.
So I used this. Now, you know I've tried every shaving cream in the whole wide world. I've tried the ones that plug into the wall and give you hot lather. Mm-hmm. I've tried the gels. I've tried everything. There's two good reasons why the reason I started using your leg shaving stuff was because I ran out of mine.
Okay.
But there's two reasons why I'm never going to not use it again.
Oh, great. Why?
Number one, it works better than any other face shaving cream I've ever used in my life.
Okay. And it smells good, right?
The second one right there.
Smells girly.
I smell pretty.
That's right.
It does. It is unbelievable. I'm not doing a commercial for them on purpose. I'm not there. It's skin to munt.
Uh-huh.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think it is. Mm-hmm.
S-K-I-N, skin, and then
2 minutes.
Like intimate or something like that. So it doesn't really say anything
Joe
else.
Joe is your next caller.
Joe, just a minute.
Joe, save us.
Moisturizing hydrant, shave gel. It's a lotionized. It has shea butter in it.
See, I know the good stuff.
Well,
just ask me.
I'm just telling you guys out there, tell your wife that you want this new leg shaving stuff for your face, and they'll all say I'm a hero.
Okay.
All righty. Who's on the phone?
Joe.
Joe, good morning to you, buddy. Do you shave your legs, Joe, or your face?
Yes, I do shave.
Okay. All righty. Good. How can I help you?
I got a question. If you can, number one, tell me how much should I expect? I got a 66 Chevy pickup truck, and I want to change it from a manual to an automatic. What's the cost that I'm looking at if you can recommend someone to do that?
What part of town do you live in?
I live in West Phoenix, 91st Avenue in Thomas, off the 101. There.
Okay, I don't have anybody there. You're going to have to go to Deer Valley and I-17. And the
okay,
question is what motor you got in this old pickup truck, this 60 model pickup truck?
Oh, gosh. I think it's a 350.
Okay, if it's a 350, does it have a carburetor on it?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. So it has a carburetor, and how do you shift it right now? Is it on the floor?
On the floor, yes.
Where do you want it to shift? If you put an automatic in it, Jeff?
Whatever's easiest, yeah. I like the floor.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you have a couple of different choices for transmissions because you don't have a fuel-injected motor and you haven't put a big hot rod motor in there and you're not running anything with a computer. So I want you to call this transmission shop, and I want you to talk to Alger, A-L-G-E-R. Okay?
Okay.
And it's S and S.
A-N-S.
A-N-S. It's A and S, Transmission Shop, Deer Valley and I-17. A is for Alger. S is for Shelley. Now, there's all kinds of guesses on this. A is for automatic, and S is for standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some nasty ones associated with that. But Alger, Shelley is his wife, and she's actually the best part of those two people. Kind of like your mother says about me.
Like me.
So I want you to talk to Alger. Because you're going to have to change the cross member, and you're going to have to change the drive shaft, and you're going to find a 350 or a 400 that's going to bolt right up to the back of that motor with no problem whatsoever. You're going to have to change the flywheel. The biggest problem you're going to have is the shifter. Now I'm betting he's going to tell you that he's going to put a cable to shift it, then he's going to put this box on the middle of the floor, and you're actually going to have an automatic shifter right on the floor. And somebody sitting in the middle of the truck can kind of straddle that. I think that's going to be your best bet. Now, he might be able to actually tell you that he can use your four-speed shifter to shift that automatic transmission. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
And that would be a lot of fun because Park would be all the way up against the dash and so forth and so on. But I want you to call Alger. He's without a doubt the one I would go to if I was in your situation and you had a 66 Chevy pickup with a V8 in it and it's got a 3 or 4 speed. You want that out. You want an automatic. Like I said, flywheel, transmission, cross member, drive shaft. All that stuff is going to have to be. And as far as bidding is concerned, I don't know. But a lot of those parts are available used. All righty?
Okay.
Right, thank you very much, Joe.
What's his number?
I don't know.
Do you have his number or no?
No, I have his cell phone number, but he'd kill me if I gave that to you.
Yeah.
So just look up ANS Transmissions. All righty?
I hope so. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. Mark Salem, my wife sitting here next to me. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. I've been talking on the radio since 1988, and I'll tell you if I don't know, I'll tell you if I do know, or I'll give you the best advice I can give you. I don't tell you about my shop because that's not what the show is all about. I have a shop. I have a shop in Tempe. I've been serving that area for 37 years, but this is about me giving back to the community. This is about me giving because the Lord's blessed me with things I'll only understand when I get there. Anyway, let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's in Phoenix. Phil's been around since 1968. He's on Washington and 40th Street. So if you've gone up and down Washington on the north side of the street, you've seen what we call ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange. He really does a good job. He kind of holds down that central Phoenix area perfectly. And people like him, and they tell me nice stories about him. So if you have a transmission problem or a concern, not everything needs to be rebuilt. That's driven home every single day to people. So I would suggest you go to ANS Transmissions. ATE Transmissions is what I mean.
All mixed
up
here.
I was looking at the wrong thing. That's all.
Yep.
So anyway, Randy, good morning to you. How can I help you?
How you doing, Mark?
Good.
Hey, I just got a question. I got a 2012 Dodge with a Cummins diesel turbo. Hey, can you explain the tow haul button to me?
Yeah. The tow haul button.
I mean, I'm not quite sure what it does or how it works.
Okay.
And I've been listening to your show for about a year.
All right, I can explain it to you. The tow haul button does two things. When you're hauling something or you're going up a hill, first of all, if you're running empty with your diesel, you know, you're never going to use the tow haul button. So you're running empty. That diesel's got plenty enough power to haul you all the way to Flagstaff and never shift to gear and let you do 93 miles an hour if you were stupid enough to do that fast. The idea is the tow haul button means when you're towing. Now, when you start going up a hill and you're hauling a trailer like everybody that was coming up to Payson and to Pine Top yesterday, as you're coming up a hill, the transmission is going to hunt on you. It's going to upshift, then it's going to downshift. Then it's going to upshift and downshift as you start playing with the throttle, trying to keep it steady at 62 miles an hour. Well, the tow haul button does two things. It raises the pressure inside the transmission, and it takes you away from overdrive. So it kind of puts you in a tow haul gear. And I want you to think of it this way. Maybe, and don't bunch, all you engineers, don't call me about what I'm saying about it being true or not. I'm trying to draw a visual picture for Randy. Randy, pretend this is a 6-speed transmission. And when you push the overdrive button, it goes to 4th. And when you push the tow haul button, it kind of goes to 5th. And then the tow haul button kind of puts you at 4th. So I want you to just kind of look at it from that point of view. My Dodge Cummins, and I have a one-ton, my Dodge Cummins, the only time I use the tow haul button is when I'm going downhill, and I also have a brake on my dash, an exhaust brake. And I use the tow haul button when I'm hauling horses, and I'm going uphill, and I'm usually hauling a trailer with 4 horses in it, and every one of them is my wife's horse, and they're all fatter than hell. And so they must weigh 7,000 pounds apiece.
Oh, stop.
Anyway, so
there
I,
you go.
Yeah, I don't even like horses, so I don't know where he got that.
Well, you were complaining last night that I sold your horse.
My one horse I like.
We have plenty of other ones.
That only weighed 1,000 pounds, but go
no,
ahead.
No, she didn't.
Okay.
All righty. But anyway, Randy, that's what the tow haul button does. It raises the pressure, and the entire transmission works off hydraulic pressure of the transmission fluid. So it raises the pressure. It gives you a little bit more oomph, and it almost always eliminates you going, which causes tremendous heat, which causes damage to your transmission. So it'll just hang in there.
Right.
That's what it goes.
That's what I caught the last time I heard you talk about it. And so, Mark, going up the hill, you don't need to have it on, just going down?
Well, you can try it down because it will downshift for you, especially when you apply the brake. So you're going downhill.
Right.
Say you're coming from Payson, and you're on your way down that one big long stretch right before you get to the bottom of the hill and start back up. And so you're going around those curves, and maybe you want to slow down a little bit. You push the tow haul button, and you gently apply the brakes, and it should go ding like that.
Yep, it does.
Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of like a brake if you want to use it as a brake, and I do. But most of the time, I don't touch the tow haul until I'm going up and down a hill with the horses on there or a bunch of girlfriends that are a little chunky. Okay?
There you go. That's what was
there
in your
tip. All right. Thank you, Randy.
That
sounds more right.
All right. You bet, Randy. Yeah. Thank you very much. Anyway.
Speaking of braking, I just thought about this story again that I was telling our friends the other night. I was coming down the hill, Slate Creek Hill, big hill, and I'm smelling – this smoke, you know, or smelling this bad brake fire, it smelled like. It
smells like somebody's brakes are on fire.
Fire, yeah. And so I go about a mile down the road, and here's this truck, and just smoking like crazy. It was an 18-wheeler. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this guy's in trouble. I got to get away from him because his brakes are on fire or whatever. So I know that there is a truck ramp down not very far that they just put in there.
And it's right before the hairpin left turn, and the trucks never make that turn if they've lost their brakes.
Exactly. So I'm thinking, okay, this guy's going to be using this. I get to the truck ramp, and there is a guy in the entrance changing a tire right there. And I'm thinking, you know, all heck's going to break loose. I never heard anything, so I guess everything was fine, and the guy must have kept going, but it was crazy. Don't ever do that, people. Don't ever stop in the truck ramp, ramp, and change a tire.
All right, so let's talk about that. You're coming down the hill. You've completely lost control of your truck. You're weighing 80,000 pounds, and there's a guy blocking the ramp. Do you kill yourself or do you run over his car and hope he survives when you knock his car out of the way and you go through the truck ramp?
Well, if he would have gone that way, he would have hit the car and the guy, because the guy was kneeling down, still in the process of changing the tire. There's no way. I don't think he could have missed him. The guy couldn't have been in a worse spot. He was almost directly in the middle of the entrance.
But if, let me close my eyes and say that he's at the back of the car, and you say, okay, well, I'm just going to hit the car and leave him standing.
Okay.
I don't know that. But that's a serious decision that you have to make.
Yeah.
You am I going to die or is someone else going to die? And this guy is changing his tire right in front of an emergency truck ramp, knowing he should know that 80,000 pounds is coming down the mountain.
Yeah.
All righty, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. And I'm at your service here talking about cars and car repair questions, 602-508-0960. We've got one line of it, or we got four lines available because Brian's on one of them. But I'm going to tell you about Larry Harker's Auto real quick. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. They've been in that same building working on cars since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Bob runs the shop. Ellen runs the front. They're both very pleasant, very sturdy people. They know what they're doing, and they know what right and wrong is. But Bob is one of the best diagnosticians that I've ever seen. He has the tenacity, the knowledge, the skills to track down stuff, and he really likes the start of the conversation. I've had this to 10 other places, and nobody can fix it. The problem is you've already spent a bunch of money, and he's going to tell you, I'm not going to fix your car for free because all the rest of those guys have your money. So the issue is let's fix your car, and then maybe you can go back and talk to some of those guys about a refund. One way or another, 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you've got one of those problems that nobody can fix, then I'd go see Bob at Larry Harker's Auto. Brian, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. To answer that question about a truck driver, whether or not they wipe out a car that's, stopped somewhere, or an accident that happens to be across the road and your only choice is to put it in the side of a bridge or something like that, or in the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
You're better off, we were told, because I drove a truck for a little while, you're better off putting your own life in peril than wiping out a bunch of people on the side of the road.
Okay.
Wow. That's...
In fact, since you're a professional driver, you'll probably do prison time.
Okay.
If you wipe out a bunch of people.
Yeah, it was just a tough dilemma. I brought that up because I don't know what I would have done. And I do drive a big truck. We have a truck that we haul big equipment on, and I've come down Slate Creek Hill. And you know that if you run up on top of your red line, if 2200's at the top end, that you don't have any RPM
right.
to drop a gear. So you're just kind of stuck.
No, first off, you have to – before you crest the hill, you should be going slow enough already, and I've already downshifted before you've crested that hill.
And I understand that completely.
If your brakes, unless you should check your slack adjusters and everything before you even start your trip anyway. It is just a rule of thumb that already be going slow enough that you'll be able to slow down quickly and get ahead of it should you start running away a little bit before your brakes burn up.
Well, and it's you come down the hill and you're in seventh gear, and in order to go to sixth gear, you have to have a 500 RPM rise. Well, if you're already at the limit,
right.
that 500's gone, so you're coming down that hill in seventh gear whether you like it or not. And if you're fully loaded at 88,000 pounds, your brakes aren't going to last that long, and now you're becoming a rocket ship. So, and people get mad at
Jake brakes won't. Go ahead.
Yeah, people get mad at the big trucks for going down slowly, and you hear the brrrr, and they're maybe doing 10,
right.
15, 20. They don't understand how much that weighs, and they don't understand how easy it is for that truck to get completely away from that driver. And they think, okay, well, you're just going to stop on the brakes. Well, there is no brakes. Now what do you do? Well, just downshift. I don't have a place to go. I'm in seventh gear. I can't go to sixth. Well, push the clutch in and put it in sixth gear. Well, it's just not that easy. So thank you for bringing that up.
Right, it just doesn't work. I mean, even with trying to speed up the same, speed up the gears to try to grab that lower gear, you still, Once it push, it'll push right past those Jake brakes if you're too in too high of a gear.
Yeah, and Jake brakes is the exhaust brake, the brrrr that you're coming down the hill. And like you said, you can go right past the that ability to slow you down, and you can just go past that in the blink of an eye, and you hear the brrrr, and you look at your speedometer, and you're gaining speed, and you're going, well, there, I'm in big trouble now. So anyway, thank you, Brian. Thank you very much for that. And who we got next, Gil?
No, he just said
2 minutes.
Open.
Oh, he said no one wants to talk to us. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We talked about, I found two transmission shops that are run by guys that are just exceptional shops, and they're in areas that we don't have a transmission shop. So one of them is in Tempe, and one of them is Scottsdale. One of them is in Deer Valley and I-17. Let me tell you why that's important. They're both wholesale and fleet shops. So they're not going to deal with anybody. You have to go through me to get to them. I'm going to be the filter. So if you have a problem, and it's a tough problem, I will arrange to get you there. They're going to bill you, and they're going to fix your car, which is what they do every day. So, but they're not going to do leaks, and they're not going to do services. So they're going to take a 1 to 10, and they're going to take the top off from 9 to 10. That's where they shine. So my email address is easy, Mark with a K at MarkSalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Keep that, because if you have a transmission problem, I have the keys to those gates. I'm not making a dime on your job. I'm going to open the door. I'm going to feed you to this wholesale shop, and they're going to fix it. When we come back, I'm going to read you an email about one of the wholesale shops that I'm extremely proud about. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about cars and everything else that
that my psychiatrist that you can think of.
My psychiatrist says to talk about. So,
leg shaving cream. I can't believe you brought that up.
You know, that it was – I'm talking to a lot of guys.
Okay.
And I'm just telling them, you're using this. I had to use it because I ran out, and I really liked it, and I'm just sharing that. I'm not suggesting that we all put nylons on or we all change our sexes.
That's good.
I'm suggesting that if you don't like your shaving cream or if you've bounced around a lot, then this one's worth it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
You know, you just criticize people for just the fun of it is what I think.
Just you.
Just me, yeah.
Just you.
All right. I want to tell you real quick. I want to read you an email. I'm really proud of this. Remember the two transmissions I was talking about?
Right.
Okay. I had a shifting problem with my 01 Dodge diesel. Would go up and down and shift a lot at exactly 45 miles an hour. You sent me to A&S. Since he had whiskers out of his ears, and what that means, folks, is I say that when you're going to have your car fixed, look for gray hair or a guy with gray hair, nose hairs or gray hairs coming out of his ears. That's a seasoned veteran in that problem. So, since Alger had whiskers coming out of his ears, I figured I could trust him, and he knew his stuff. He said he knew it was an extraneous voltage problem, and he had to track it down. And what he's talking about is instead of being DC voltage, it's creating AC voltage, and the computer's having a tough time understanding the changes in direct current versus alternating current. So the first thing he wanted to do was put this a voltage regulator on this one line. So he did, and I drove it, and it didn't change anything. So then he came back, and he said, I want to try one more thing. And whatever he did, I drove away, and I knew instantly he had fixed it. So I drove it for a couple of days to make absolutely sure, and the truck was absolutely solved. So I went back to him, and I said, problem solved. So he says, so rare to meet somebody like Al who is honest and knowledgeable. I'm indebted to you too, just passing the solution on to an odd problem to put in your arsenal. Thank you, Jim. You know what he did to fix this?
What?
He moved and relocated the alternator harness. He didn't sell him an alternator. He didn't sell him a computer. He didn't sell him transmission work. He didn't sell him the up and overdrive unit. He didn't sell him a new PC for the transmission that's called TC, Transmission Control Module, TCM. He didn't do any of that. His entire bill to fix this, I think the last time I talked to him, was $225 to $235.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
That's
amazing. 2 hours worth of time, and he fixed it for $230. Mm-hmm. This was a bad thing about to happen because I've never heard of that before, so I called him and said, what? Tell me. Teach me. Mm-hmm. And he talked about AC voltage, and he said, this is something that's really big right now in our industry with Dodges. And he says, and this guy said, put this filter in, and that worked for me, and this guy says, do that, and this guy says, do that. Well, a lot of the transmission shops are on a very private website where they communicate with one another. So he says, I tried the most common one, and I tried the second one. He says, we fixed it. Okay. So, and you'll remember not too long ago, he, Joe, if you remember Joe D,
yeah.
He had a problem with something, and he took it back to him, and Alger had it for a couple of days, and he took the valve body off of it, which is what makes the transmission work, and he knew exactly the passageway that was at the issue. And so he said, I put a rag over this end of the valve body, and I took compressed air, and I blew, and this little piece of metal came out. He says, once I saw that little piece of metal, I knew I'd found it. I put it all back together. I went and drove it. Car's fixed.
I'll be darned. Yeah.
Then he had rebuilt that transmission a long time ago, and I think he warrantied that work.
Really?
And I didn't think he should warranty the work because I think the time frame was well past a year.
Yeah.
But he did warranty the work. Now, I don't know if he's going to do that every time.
Right.
But him and Lorenzo, they are so good with transmissions. Mm-hmm. They just are so, so good. They know the difference. They know them every bit as well as we do fuel injection systems.
Yeah.
On domestic
lots
cars.
Lots of experience with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Lots and lots of experience. So
yeah.
It's, if you get to that point where nobody can fix your transmission or everybody's guessed with your money and wasn't able to, then you might send me an email and I'll do what I can. What we're hoping for is that I call one of those two guys. Now, again, they're wholesale and fleet shops. They work on wholesale and fleet shops. You can't go there without someone opening the door, and I have permission to, and I am their filter, so to speak. So you're going to get with me, and we're going to talk, and then I'm going to talk to both of them. And if they say, yes, I want to see that, yes, I can, I fixed that before, we're going to make that happen. But if it's not something,
if it's a routine thing,
they're not going to do that. This is troubleshooting at its finest. And they're great because, I don't have a shop for the East Valley, and now I do. And I didn't have a transmission shop for the North Valley.
Right.
Everything shooting north of what? The 202?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have anything north of the 202.
Yeah,
so
we've had a lot of trouble finding good transmission shops.
And so keeping them.
Keeping them,
and like
yeah.
I said before, you know, at the last time we talked about this, we had one that sold, mm-hmm. and the new owners did not have the requirements to be on our best car repair shops list. We had one that one was sold. We had one that closed.
Mm-hmm.
We kicked one off.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just been had a tough time.
Yeah, and we never had that many in the beginning. So,
yeah. That's been a tough one to find. And here's the reason.
Bob is your next caller.
Here's the reason, and here's the risk. Ever since the early days of my best car repair shops list, I've had on the website that it says this. If you have a problem with one of my shops, you file a nice complaint at the Better Business Bureau. The Better Business Bureau will determine who's right and who's wrong. If the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to make a refund of from anything from $1,000 to $5,000 and the shop refuses, Mark Salem and Renee Salem will write you that check. Now, two things happen after that. We're going to kick the shop right off our list.
Right.
Because he hasn't followed the rules.
Right.
And we'll
yeah.
find somebody else, hopefully. But the idea is I'm putting my money where my mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to say to yourself, how many times have you paid? How many times have you had to pay for a shop? Answer that question.
Never.
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 Because the guys that are part of our group are the best. They know. And they know that they're not going to be able to bamboozle the group mm-hmm. with some kind of double talk. And have the group buy off that they really didn't deserve to have to make a $372 refund.
Right, yeah.
So, anyway, Bob, good morning. Is it Bob?
Yes.
Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
I just was looking for an opinion, really.
Okay.
Got a 2005 Ford Focus.
Okay.
And the air conditioning is broke.
Okay.
I had it in, and they said that the whole system needs to be replaced. And he gave me $1,300 estimate on doing that.
Okay.
And I was just wanting to know your opinion on the car's got 85,000 miles on it. It's one owner car since new, and it's, you know, it needs a set of tires. But I mean, basically, the car's a good running little car. It's just the air conditioner's out.
Okay.
I was just wanting to know what your opinion was.
All right. It's my opinion is do you have a clue as to what the $1,300 includes?
It was $800 kit.
Okay.
That had to go in it for parts.
Compressor.
Okay. Tells me compressor, dryer.
I'm looking for two things: hoses and condenser.
Yes, hoses. I believe hoses is included in that. Hose and compressor. I know.
Okay. And there's
going to. I don't know about the condenser.
Okay, receiver, dryer. And they're probably going to flush the condenser, but I was looking for those. I want to tell you, if they're going to do the compressor, and they're going to do the receiver driver, and they're going to do the hoses, then they're going to do all the labor, and that includes the refrigerant, and it includes flushing the evaporator, which is the part behind the glove box that gets cold, and flushing the condenser, which is the part in front of the radiator that gets hot, then I think your $1,300, give or take, is $100 away from my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were at 14, I'd say fine. If you were, say, 12, I'd say I like that better. But I don't. Now, the question is the $1,300 include sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges? Because 10% of sales tax is going to take the $1,300 to $1,430, because it's 10% of your $1,300. Then all of a sudden we got shop supplies and environmental charges. We're up to $1,450 to $1,500. So you need to clear that up.
We've been dealing with this shop for some time.
Okay.
And, the $1,300 is a round number, and it's not going to vary more than $50 either way.
Okay.
You know. So I think the $1,300 is an awful good number. I just don't know whether it's worth $1,300 repairs for a $2,000 car.
Okay, well, I can answer that, too. Your car's 17 years old. Right?
Yep.
1300 divided by 17 equals $76 a year. Right? $76. Did I do that right? $1,300 divided by 17 years is $76 a year. Divided by 12 a month. So you paid $6.37 a month for air conditioning for 17 years. If you're going to keep this car, I say, yeah, put it in. And I'll tell you why. If you're going to buy a new car, I can put an engine in your Focus. I can put a transmission in your Focus. And I can fix your air conditioning in your Focus for what you're going to spend for sales tax and license plates. And neither one of the sales tax or license plates is a recoverable amount of money. So, I don't know. 85,000 miles doesn't bother me on a 17-year-old car.
Yeah, that's not much.
I mean, that's nothing. But in reality, you've only paid $7.60-some-odd cents a year for the privilege of having the air conditioning. So, if you're going to keep it, that cost will be pretty much the same. So, even if you half that and say it only lasts 10 years, mm-hmm. you're still in good shape. I want you to look at the big picture. You'll have that $1,300 paid off in a year if you pay it off at $100 a month. And so the answer to your question is, I think you're, in the absence of any other information, I think $1,300 is a fair price. That's number one. Number two, I would think, is your wife involved in this decision?
No.
Okay.
No, and it's really teenagers will be driving the car.
Okay. And are the teenagers kin of yours, kids of yours?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I can tell you that my daughters wouldn't go for going through a Phoenix summer without air in the car, and I would hear complaining that would drive me crazy for the next 6 months, and I would look back and say, phew, I should have spent the money. So I really think when you look at the big picture, I haven't changed my mind. $1,300 is a fair price. I think you ought to fix it.
Okay.
All right.
That's all I wanted to know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. Air Park Auto is up in North Scottsdale. Nadine runs Air Park Auto. It's probably the only female-operated shop, and she answers to no man. I say that a lot, and she giggles about that. She says, I'm not quite sure I like you saying that, but she doesn't. She answers to no man.
Neither do I. Oh, no.
Yeah, and that's true. You can make decisions at our facility without me. The kids can get together and overrule me anytime you want, and sometimes you do.
We usually do, yes.
The problem with you and the kids is this, is the easy decisions you make and the ones where you give a customer a refund because we messed up and there's all that warm and fuzzy crap going on, that's what you guys do. I get the ones that the fire hill was set and now the whole forest is burning. Those are the ones I get. That's right. Don't try to lie about it.
I don't know if anybody's going to feel sorry for you.
Okay, well, let me get back to the Air Park Auto.
Exactly.
Yeah, Air Park Auto is located... on Raintree, just east of Hayden. And Raintree runs parallel to Bell or Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard. It's just south, and it's just east of Hayden. They're a really good shop. They've been around a very long time, since 1985. And I'm very proud that Nadine is part of our organization. So if you live anywhere north of McCormick Ranch, all the way from 56th Street to the west and Fountain Hills to the east and all the way up to Carefree, that area is held down by one of the finest shops I've been around, and that's Air Park Auto Service. And it, like I say, it's on Raintree, just east of Hayden. It's a good shop. All right, do you have any words of wisdom to pass on to people before we
say
goodbye?
No, I'd say just don't change your tire in the middle of a, you know, emergency truck ramp is about the only thing I
can
think of.
No, I understand. And by the way, I do want to slap myself on the back. We go up and down the mountain a lot. I stop and help people. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people have a flat tire and their spare is flat. I can't tell you how many times they don't have a wrench. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times they pull the donut out and it's flat. And through the grace of God, I have air on my truck. Mm-hmm. So I'll air. And the other day, a guy was off to the side of the road and the spare hadn't been out of the cars in so long that the big bolt that holds it in was rusted.
Oh,
so I got a big bar out of my truck and we pried it up while I took a wrench and took the bolt out. So I got the spare out. Then it was flat. He gave me a box of tamales and I was happy with that.
Yeah, that's nice.
But if you need help, open your hood and stand at the back of your car. Those of us that drive by that have time will stop and help you. Stay away from anybody and don't get in anybody else's truck, no matter what the situation is. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt. Drive safely. And my email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark@marksalem.com. If you want to talk to me, that's the easiest way to get me.